Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Black Motherhood Empowerment. I'm Denise Bowles, and I'm so thrilled to be back here with you again. About a week ago, we had a special show come up, and we had some technical difficulties, and I was so dismayed at having to cancel the show because we just couldn't hear our guest, and we wanted to hear every word he had to say. But he has graciously agreed to come back and be on the show today. So we're doing it again, and it's going to be better the second time around, as the saying goes. I'm Denise Bowles. You're here with Black Motherhood Empowerment. We're talking about today education and what it is as far as getting black male teachers to the blackboard so that our children who are going to school see a representation of themselves. You can like Black Motherhood Empowerment here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm also found on Facebook under Raising Princes to Be Kings, A Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son. That's my first book. So please follow me. I have some very provocative shows with some wonderful guests to bring you the most empowering information possible. And my special guest today is a young man who's finishing up his PhD. He'll be graduating in May of 2014, and I am so proud of him and so excited. His name is Travis Bristol. Travis, hello.
Hi, Denise. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Now, Travis wrote a very provocative blog that caught my attention while I was surfing the net, and it's under the Shanker blog, and he's writing about calling black men to the blackboard, and it's very provocative and very intriguing because Travis's PhD is focusing around education and blacks, and I said to myself, I have to have this scholar on my show. We have to have him on to talk about the work that he's doing and to talk about why we need to understand the importance of his blog and how we can help propel it to be a reality. So, Travis, you want to tell us a little bit about what you're studying right now, what your degree you're completing in?
Yeah, so I am a fifth-year doctoral student in the Education Policy and Social Analysis program at the School of Education at Columbia University. And my research interest is explores the sort of the intersection of race and gender in organizations or in schools. So I'm interested in how someone's race and gender, how that might influence the ways in which they experience, the ways in which they might interact with people, their decisions to stay or leave that organization. And I'm particularly interested in schools.
All right. Very good. And you went to a public school here in New York or somewhere else?
I did. I graduated. I went to graduated from Washington Irving High School on 14th Street in Union Square.
All right. So you're born and bred here. Now, in your time of going through the school system here in New York City, how many teachers of color or how many basically let's say black male teachers did you have at your blackboard?
Interesting question. I had one black male teacher from kindergarten to 12th grade, 10th grade
wow.
global studies. His name was Mr. Gaddy. Yeah.
And you had one teacher out of 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. One teacher out of 12 years. You know, my son is now a fifth grade school teacher in New York City. He's in the New York City School District, and he's teaching fifth grade, as I said. He had about three male black teachers in his tenure going through public school, and that's in upstate New York, mind you. So it's amazing
wow.
how you were in the city and you only got one, and my son is upstate New York and he managed to get three. It's
wow.
a little bit of a rarity,
wow.
isn't it?
Wow.
Right. So
yeah.
So it's very interesting. My son went into the education arena on his own, no suggestion of mine. He chose the field of the profession himself, and he said throughout his studies that he's one of those rarities. You know, he's one of the few students in the School of Education. Are you the same thing?
I am. As I mentioned in the blog, black male teachers make up 1.9% of all U.S. public school teachers. So black male teachers are an absolute minority, really, in all public schools in the country.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Well, that's really my dissertation research. So I think that there is an issue clearly around recruitment. Many schools and many school districts might say that they have a hard time recruiting black men, but I actually think, that is clearly an issue, but I also think schools have a very challenging time retaining black male teachers. And in fact, one of the things that I explore in my study is that black men leave schools or leave schools at a disproportionate rate relative to other teachers.
Okay.
And so lots of my research focuses on trying to understand why is it that that black men, who everyone says we need to be at the blackboard, why are they leaving at a high rate?
Okay. And what, if you're able to, because I know you're still a work in progress, you're finishing up the very end now, what have you come up with thus far in your research and in your studies?
Yeah. So I think that because of their absolute minority status, both around gender and race, schools are very challenging places for black male teachers. And so I think that one of the things I hypothesize is that the black male crisis that we have in schools for our own black boys in schools, that's actually, that manifests itself in the teaching profession. So like black boys struggle with schools, or like how schools are challenging places for black boys, and that's why they drop out, are suspended at a disproportionate rate relative to everyone else. So too is the case that black teachers, because schools are so challenging. So I think there is some sort of connection between black boys and black male teachers, and that might account for some of one of the reasons why black male teachers turn over at a high rate.
Wow. Okay. And right. If they're dissuaded from the classroom, there's no way that they're going to turn around and come back and get a degree and then want to come back into a classroom, is what you're basically saying.
Yes. So I think that's absolutely part of it. And I think that by dint of schools only having one or two black male teachers, that those schools become hard places, right? Who do I have lunch with? Who do I interact with? Are people seeing me as being I came to the profession to be a teacher, but are people seeing me as a dean? And so I think black men are often cast in sort of very sort of stereotypical roles that make it hard for them to remain in the classroom.
Oh, boy. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. I say that because as my son was finishing up his studies, you know, we're very close, and I supported him as a parent throughout his collegiate studies, so we were very close with that. And he graduated with his master's degree in education and his certifications, and he was saying that while he was doing that, the schools were looking at him, the principals and stuff would come, and they would try to recruit him very early to get him to come into their schools because they feel of such a scarcity of having a black male in the profession, that everybody wanted, you know, his time, and everybody wanted him to visit their school and consider, you know, an opening with their building.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think black male teachers are definitely in demand in certain types of schools. So by that, I mean, I think that many schools that that fail, that have large numbers of students who are failing, those schools try, I think, to go after black male teachers. This is something that I'm finding from my own study, because they believe that if we can just control the boys, if we can get these black men to come in and control the boys, then our scores will go up. So I think that certain schools want black male teachers more than maybe other schools, but that's one of the hypotheses that I have from my study. But I think in general, many schools on average, suggest that they want black male teachers.
Wow. And what could we do? What can be done? It's not just a matter of parents requesting this, but from a policy standpoint, from more of a structure standpoint, can there be more institutions offering, say, free tuition to black males who want to go to college and major as educators, or incentives for schools to get black male teachers? What can be done?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that I found from my study was that many of the black men who expressed who actually became teachers said that they had an early experience teaching. So by that I mean many of the black men were working in maybe like an after-school program in college,
okay.
And so they realized that, wow, actually teaching is not as bad as I once thought.
Okay.
Many of them talked about having a summer job, so I think early experiences might be a way to get more black men into the pipeline.
Okay. And there is a student teaching regimen that my son had to follow in his graduate studies. For a year, he had to student teach, and he chose, you know, inner city schools in New York City. He did not want to stay up here in suburbia, New York, where the resources and the attitude of education is completely different. He wanted to be in the Ring of Fire. And you know, it's really odd, though, because normally the norm is that we first, I'm sure you did this study too, first we saw a wave of female white teachers. Then we saw a wave of white male teachers who came through because they wanted to get out of being drafted, correct?
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Yes, I mean, I think that many people have found teaching for reasons outside of wanting to help children, yes.
Well, from what I did my research on, predominantly female whites, teachers were back in the day, and that's what a woman
right.
did. She became an educator, and she taught children,
right.
and that was accepted. And then when the war came, like Vietnam and stuff, white men went to college to become educators to get out of being drafted. So for a while, we had a pretty large number of white males going into the education arena. And
yeah.
then it kind of tapered off a little bit, and it is what it is today. Still predominantly white, still predominantly female, but the black and Latino, it's very, very rare, very, very rare. Have you interviewed any black male teachers in your research?
Yeah, so the piece that I wrote for Shanker, that came out of a survey that I administered to teachers in a school district in the Northeast. Now, after I did that survey, I selected 14 schools, and then I interviewed 27 black male teachers. So my dissertation, the data for my dissertation is focused on speaking to 27 black male teachers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what did they have to say? You're talking about them feeling isolated. What else did they have to say about being in this profession and being black?
Yeah, so I think, to one of my earlier points, many of them talked about being stigmatized, being asked to sort of be responsible for not teaching black boys but policing black boys, and that became very challenging. I mean, if you might imagine you spent 4 years in college, a year or two in grad school, learning to become a teacher, and then all of a sudden you are being asked to become a police officer, those things make it very challenging and might make you want to leave the profession.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that. The schools today, you've heard the saying, you've heard the jargon a gazillion times that these schools are junior mock prisons, okay? They're
yeah.
just the pipeline for our boys of color to just go right into the prison system, and that's it. And I've seen where, yes, upstate New York here where I live in a school district where they only have like a 42% graduation rate for black males.
Wow.
It is very punitive. The males that are there, they talk very loud. They're very controlling. They're very much correction officered attitude.
Yeah.
And they stay in these jobs because it pays very well up here because the district is so considered so high risk, and I hate using that word, that they get paid very well. But so you're saying in talking to these teachers, they really resent having to come out and be the enforcement where they'd rather be the educator, they'd rather be the role model, correct?
Yes, I mean, because that's what they were trained to do.
Right.
Those are the tools that they were given. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I could see that happening because with my son going into the school district, he's already been, asked to do this program and to reach out to
right.
these boys who are in trouble. And, it's almost to the point that he has to put, like you said, the boundaries up and say, hey, I'm an educator. Let me do my
yeah.
job first. And then the other needs, if we can fit them in, we can try to fit those in.
Right. Yeah.
So now why
and I,
do you...
And I should say that, yeah.
No, you go ahead.
So, and I should say, I mean, many of the black male teachers, I mean, they want to help, you know, the boys of color in their school, but to what you said about, you know, your own son, the pressures of having to constantly do this, to be up in your class teaching and then have one of your colleagues say, can this boy sit in your class, or can you come talk to this boy in my class, right? I mean, all those interruptions become very sort of waning on their spirits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like it's a daunting situation that they got themselves into. And the need is so great, the volume is so high that coming in as a new teacher, it could be overwhelming without the proper mentorship and support. It definitely could be. Now, do you think it would – why do you think colleges have not joined in and say, hey, look, we're willing to give a certain number of black males free tuition in order to help build up the diversity in the education system here in America? I mean, my son did not go to one of those schools where they offer that free tuition for teachers. He did not. He graduated, and he's now facing student loans. But why is that? Why are they not saying, hey, let's do a nationwide incentive to get teachers of color to the blackboard?
Yeah. I mean, there are some isolated schools. So Clemson University has a Call Me Mister program.
Okay.
In New York, Brooklyn College has a program dedicated to sort of supporting black male teachers and having them teach in New York City. But I agree. I mean, that there isn't an urgency of trying to outside of the stance of title, right, because the idea of calling black men to the blackboard, that's Secretary Duncan's term. So outside of that nice title, there hasn't necessarily been funds to sort of support black men in teaching. And I think it would be expensive. I imagine it might be hard to do that without making it appear discriminatory.
Okay. And I see your point, but if the need is there and if this type of intervention could bring about the success of maybe, say, 20% of black boys in America not going to prison, completing school on time, seeking higher degrees, and getting into the professional arena, wouldn't you say it's worth it?
Yes. There have actually been studies. There's a professor, his name is Thomas D. He's a professor. He's an economics professor at Stanford. And one of the things that he found was that, you know, that there was a relationship between the race of the teacher and how students performed. And so, you know, much of this sort of recruitment around getting black male teachers to the blackboard, it's not this sort of feel good policy that people might be promoting, but you know, this one study found that that actually there was a relationship, a positive relationship, in terms of how students performed when they had a same race and same gender teacher.
Right, and the outcome of that was that it was an improvement for the student, correct?
Yes, right. Yes,
okay.
Improvement in scores, test scores. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I do see that. I observe my son as a visitor, as a class mom in his own classroom, and I do see how the children respond to a male presence, to a male voice, to male leadership. I do see that, and sometimes it is different than it is to a female. I do see that. I do see boys snapping up at attention. I do see that connection of wanting to do well and to please the teacher. To get that attention. So, yeah, I do see those things definitely happening there. I definitely do. I'm just totally bemused at what you're saying here in your blog is that, you know, there's just 20%. It's the numbers are so low. The numbers are so low, and yet there's very few people who are really addressing this issue. I mean, outside of yourself completing your own studies, how many more people are really focused on this?
Yeah, I should say that my work is really, I'm standing on the shoulders of people like Marvin Lynn, who really started talking about Black
yes.
Male teachers.
That's right. I know him very well. He was on my show previously. Yes, Dr. Marvin Lynn out of Chicago is phenomenal. Yes.
Yeah. So there's another professor at Howard. His name is Professor Tolson, Ivory Tolson. There's one of my dissertation committee members, Yolanda Silly Ruiz. There are many. There's another professor at Morgan State, Thurman Bridges. These are all individuals who have been writing about Black male teachers and the experiences of Black men. I am adding to the work by thinking about how we retain them. But, I mean, they're over the past 10 years or so, people have started to turn their attention to thinking about this particular group of teachers, Black men. So it's not, I'm not the first person to do this. I'm really adding and standing on their shoulders.
And, you know, it's just amazing that the correlation between the Black male teacher and the performance of the Black male child in school. I think that's very profound, and you talk about that here in your blog. And you were saying it, you know, the academic underachievement of Black males make them less likely to attain degrees in higher education. And it's true. I mean, if they're having a bad time in the classroom as a youth, they're certainly not going to come back in there as an adult with a teaching degree.
Right.
You know, they've been traumatized. They've had a negative experience, and they just don't want to go back into that environment ever.
Yeah. And so there is, like I said, there is this recruitment issue, right, of getting them there. And I think that the way that we can better understand recruitment is by thinking about how we can retain them. So I think, like I said, you know, my work explores a little bit around recruitment, but I'm really interested in retaining Black male teachers.
Okay.
Form recruitment efforts.
And when you say retain them, you want them to stay in that building, in that school building, for what, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years? How long is a reasonable time for them to stay?
Yeah. I mean, I think that most programs that give funding to teachers ask them to stay for 3 years, because I think once you pass that three-year threshold, you're more likely to stay in teaching.
Okay.
But you know, actually, I mean, Black male teachers, on average, they are staying in teaching, but they are moving schools so often.
Uh-huh.
I think that's probably one of the. So when I say turnover, they are sort of hopping from school to school to school. Because they are finding, I think they're finding that schools to be very challenging places. So they want to stay for the Black and brown kids, right?
Right.
But each of schools that they're in, they're finding it challenging, and so they're moving at a higher rate than their colleagues.
Okay. Would you say it's a different level of mobility for, say, the elementary Black school teacher, the middle Black school teacher, or the high school Black school teacher?
Yeah.
Do you think there's a difference in those three levels?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have not parsed my data enough to sort of speak to grade level mobility, but that's
okay.
Actually a really good question.
Okay. And I say that only because for some teachers, they might be a little ambivalent as far as staying in certain schools because of the propensity of any kind of misconduct based on the student, you know, sexual misconduct or anything like that. So I think they're more hypervigilant on these things than other teachers might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think, what is the chances of Black teachers really leaving the classroom and going into administration? I see a lot of that happening.
Absolutely. And this is, you know, for future research, but I mean, I think that Black male teachers are pulled probably too quickly from the classroom and never get a chance to really become a education leader.
Okay.
So I think that schools want Black men to like school districts want black men to like run schools, run classrooms, they also want black men to sort of police buildings, and I think they don't, school districts don't give black men enough time to mature and learn the skills of, and the art of teaching, and they're quickly pulled in to becoming administrators. I mean, when I was a teacher in New York City, I was recruited after my fourth year, or in my fourth year, to become a principal. And I was not ready for that, but I think that happens way too often.
Right, and I certainly can agree with you, and I certainly commend you on knowing yourself well enough to say, you know what, I'm not ready for that. But there is a lure of an increased income. There is a lure of other things that would make that teacher say, oh, yeah, you know what, maybe I can be a building administrator. So there is something to be said there about, you know, that also. But I just find your blog to be very, very thought-provoking for me. It's just that, you know, with the new school year in place and, you know, how many children are not seeing a person that resembles them at the blackboard or in the library or in the principal's office, you know? I mean, I don't know. If you had an opportunity to add to this blog and to write a second follow-up blog, what would you be saying in here, Travis?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've become really fascinated by, and this is the focus of my dissertation, is that I have two types of schools. I look at one set of schools that have just one black male teacher, and then I look at another set of schools that have many more black male teachers, so about three or more. And so what I find is that schools that have one black male teacher are very different types of schools than schools that have many more black male teachers.
Expound, please.
And so, for example, schools that have, in my study in this Northeastern school district, schools that have just one black male teacher tend to be schools that are higher achieving. They tend to be smaller. They tend to have a administrator who is white, whereas schools with many more black male teachers are schools that are larger. They're larger schools. They are schools that are in danger of being closed, and the administrators tend to be of color.
Sounds like my son's school district that he graduated from. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And what else were you going to say? I'm sorry. Just the fact that you described my son's former school district that he graduated from to a T. I'm sorry.
Why is that? Because he had several black male teachers at his school?
He had several black male teachers at the school district, at the high school, and he had a black superintendent, and he had, black principals. He had principals of color, Latino principals as well in the building also. Yeah.
So it
definitely does sound very interesting with that. And as a matter of fact, he's student taught at a local school in a suburbs, and there was just one black male teacher at that school, a very high-functioning school, very high-aptitude school, very rich-in-resources school, and he was the only black teacher present. So you're definitely picking up on a trend, Travis.
I think it's something for us to learn about how we're placing black men, which schools really want black men, and which schools are just taking a token black male teacher. I think that there is a lot of. I think this dissertation, I think, will hopefully be a wake up call to urban school districts across this country.
As far as how will you be addressing in your study, Travis, the actual behavior that the black male school teacher is expected to be the law enforcer, expected to be the almost like the correction officer when he's there to be an educator. How are you going to suggest or recommend or guide administrators and educators through your study about that?
So I think like any good teacher education program, I should say that I work for the Boston Teacher Residency Program where I train teachers. Any good teacher preparation program has a component where teachers are being trained to be culturally competent. And so I think that if you move a level up, then the work that happens with that might happen with a school leader that they might learn or that this data from this dissertation might inform the kind of work that they are doing with their staff, the awareness that they might have, addressing issues that might come up very quickly, recognizing that if these issues are not dealt with, then this black male teacher or these black men might leave. So I'm hoping that it might influence the practice of administrators through maybe workshops that they have to attend by dint of being a principal. So I think that might be one concrete way.
Okay. And could it be done then? I mean, I know you said before it would look like it's cultural favoritism or something, but from a federal level where we're seeing so many young men of color being incarcerated, why can't there be, federal funding for higher education to help supplement those who are going into teaching who happen to be black males? It's almost like a no-brainer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes, I mean, of course, and I think it's often policies that seem to make the most sense that are that much more challenging to fund. You know, I mean, clearly, you know, we can't even get the government to work. We're in a shutdown because of politics. But it would require a lot of political capital being spent for the federal government to say, we're going to spend X million of dollars, trying to increase the number of this very small minority of teachers. Should it be done? Yes, but who wants to expend that kind of political capital trying to make it happen?
Mm. Well, I think it would be worth it if we can keep young black and brown boys out of prison and give them that education chance. that relativity that they're searching for and they're not finding right now. Let's face it, they're just not getting it. And it's needed. It's definitely needed. I'm looking here at your blog, and you're saying that if administrators and policymakers continue to focus solely on recruitment efforts without attention to retention, they run the risk of creating a revolving door of teachers in our public schools.
Yeah.
So there it is. I mean, you can get the teacher in there, but can you keep them there?
Yeah. So you can have. So Secretary Duncan, rightfully so, has created this this initiative. Black men to the blackboard recruitment. But if you can't keep them, right, then you just have this sort of revolving door. And so my research tries to understand how do we keep black men at the blackboard so that we avoid this revolving door.
Yeah. I don't know. And with this incentive that Senator Duncan has done, how long has it been in place? I think you said since 2011.
Yeah. So he launched it at Morehouse in 2011, and
okay.
I'm not sure much has actually happened. I don't know. I think it was I'm not sure that there was any money behind it. I think it was just the sort of this hope of getting of diversifying the teaching workforce. I'm not necessarily sure how much money the federal government put behind this, important effort.
And you quoted him in your blog, and you're saying it's troubling that less than 2% of our nation's teachers are African American males. Less than 1 in 50 teachers are black males.
Less than 1 in 50. I think the number is 1.9% of all public school teachers are black men.
Wow.
I think
that,
the number
that's
for
really
Latino
something.
Teachers is actually lower. I think it's 1.5% are Latino male teachers. So that is another study that needs to be done.
And I would be curious as to how many Latina females are in the school system. Just not quote unquote the Spanish teacher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know how stereotypical is that? So I just thought it was very, very interesting. You were saying that Attorney General Eric Holder announced the Justice Department's decision to reduce, federal mandatory drug sentencing, and he said that it's shameful and all this other stuff, and you're talking about the parallelism between jail and education in schools. And this school-to-prison pipeline is real. We see it. I mean, you know, proficiency exams, dropout rates, illiteracy. We see all these things happening. And meanwhile, it's just like, yeah, isn't that a shame? What are your feelings or thoughts about any of this? I mean, tell me this. Once you're done with your PhD, what are you going to do in the education arena for blacks?
Yeah, so I'd like to become an academic.
Okay.
So by that I mean, you know, I want to maybe become a college professor. Because there's a piece of me that wants to continue doing this kind of research. I think this research is sort of very important.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, I started my doctoral program thinking about how to improve the schooling outcomes for black and brown boys. And I'm doing that by thinking about the people who stand in front of their classrooms. And that's the kind of work I want to, you know, dedicate the rest of my life to. So that's the kind of work that I imagine doing for my next sort of move, if you will.
Okay. Yeah, I see. And I just thought it was interesting that this study started out in Morehouse, and where that's a predominantly black state, predominantly black college, predominantly black city. I'm wondering, you know, if they would go to a different environment and do those same numbers, and they'll probably be even smaller, would you say?
The 1.9%, you're saying?
Yeah.
If
they went to Florida, I mean, you know, the
right.
number of black teachers, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure the number would be a lot smaller. I mean, you know, there are several schools in the district that I study that actually don't even have a black male teacher. And this is a large,
right.
you know, northeastern school district. So,
right.
yeah,
right.
And I'm sure depending on where you go, you know, you'll have the numbers will be smaller than 1.9% or larger, right?
Definitely. What can parents do? I have a lot of parents that listen to my show. I have a lot of administrators. I have a lot of professionals that listen to my show. What can parents do to promote or to ignite or instigate the diversity in education as far as the teacher? What can they do?
So that's a great question. I mean, I worked at two schools while I was teaching in New York City. The first school, I was the only black male teacher. And there was very little discussion around. I think that the issue was we can't get any black teachers. That was the issue at that school. And the next school I went to, they made it their business to go out and find black teachers, specifically black male teachers. So I think that parents need to hold principals accountable and say, you know, it's not. I don't believe, and they should not believe. This idea that we can't find, right? I mean, we can send people to the moon, right? We can do anything we want to do. So parents, I think, need to, you know, rally together and say, this is our demand, right? You must. We want to see X number of Latino candidates up for this position. We want to interview them. We want to be part of the decision-making process. It should not be behind closed doors. It should not be this person got a job because, you know, they are your cousin and they are a part of this network. So I think that parents have to really demand this and recognize that they actually have a lot more power than they realize.
All right. That is very powerful. I hear it from my peers all the time. But to have you say it, I think that's very, very vital. And thank you for saying that parents do have more power than they realize. And a dear friend of mine, Benita Rivera, from the Mothers of the Many, she says it all the time. She says, you know, if parents would just realize how much power they possess in the realm of education, we could make faster and stronger strides in gaining
absolutely.
What's necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because too many times I just see it. I see where our children are just not represented and they're dealing with the process that is homogeneously white and culturally insensitive and basically stereotypical and riddled with with fear and personal apprehensions based on their upbringing, and they really don't make the effort to have that integration of cultural sensitivity.
Yes, and schools don't welcome them or try to make them do it, right, because they want to retain their power.
Yes, and it is about power. You said the key word right there, Travis, power. And I want to bring up the scenario again. I said it to you on the show that we had to reschedule, and I also call it, it's really amazing how, it's puberty versus perpetrator, and we see with our black males, and you talked about this earlier in the show here with me today, about how the retention of keeping, the parallelism rather, of keeping the black male child in school so he can become a school teacher, whereas if he flunks out or he has a very bad experience, he doesn't want to become a teacher. Well, we see that time and time again. Our black and brown boys are having very bad, very poor experiences in the classroom. And it happens from a very young age where they're misassigned to special ed. They're labeled very inaccurately and very early on in their education. But my favorite that I noticed in raising my son, I call it the puberty versus perpetrator syndrome. And that's where, this little boy is absolutely cute. He's wonderful. The teachers are hugging him and kissing him. They can't get enough. And then he goes through puberty, and he grows, and he gets taller and thicker, and his voice deepens, and he starts to become that black young man that so many here in America are afraid of, and that impacts his education because now that white teacher is no longer hugging him. She's actually terrified of him, and that terror comes through in the classroom, and it's one of those dissuasion tactics that actually pushes our black and brown boys from the front row of that classroom all the way out to cutting and just dropping out altogether. Have you seen anything like what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think you mentioned the word puberty, but, I mean, I've seen it. I have a son who is in the first grade. My wife and I are dealing with this very issue right now with his teacher, who's a long-term sub. But the work the work that I think parents need to do, that my wife and I are doing this right now, is to recognize, help the teacher recognize that there isn't a deficit in the person, there's a deficit in the environment. And how can you change that environment to sort of engage this black boy in terms of my own son? But I think that this is, it's an endemic problem in our public school system because teachers are, on average, I think, sometimes afraid or look at black boys the way that society misrepresents us, and they place that on them and then put them in these, or they say that they are, that there is something special about them, and that they need a special, learning space or special education. And so parents have to help teachers recognize that there is a deficit, not in the child, but in the environment.
Yes, and I couldn't have said it more eloquently or better, and I like your interpretation, and I have to let you know I'm going to be borrowing that. I really am. I'm going to be borrowing that for sure. I didn't know you were a parent, Travis. Is this your only child you have so far?
I have two kids. I have a six-year-old and a two-year-old.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. And you're right. I do see that where, and I say the same thing that you said for the education part of it. I say that same premise to our black single moms. Don't raise your child in an attitude or an environment of deficit. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Because it just strikes the kid down before he even gets a chance to do anything. And living that life of deficit really does hold a person back, especially if you're black. So, yes, you're absolutely right to make sure that the educators know that being black is not a deficit. And
absolutely,
that does come about the awareness of education for the educator. Black history. I've learned so much in the past 10 years alone on how much contributions blacks have made to America as far as inventions and political, art, music, all kinds of contributions that so many people who are not black don't know. And it's not written in the history books because history books are written by white people.
Yeah. There's incentive not to have that story told.
Right, exactly. Because as you said before, this is definitely a source of control. Control is a very scary word to me in education, because I think when you're educating and when you are educated, you become boundless. You become, you know, infinite in what you can do. So when you have this control in there, I just think that that's kind of like so, and it doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah, it just doesn't belong there. But living, having that attitude of deficit, as you said, in the person is wrong, and it's the environment that's a deficit. Can we talk a little bit about where in the environment that's a deficit for education for our Black and Brown boys, Travis?
Yeah. So I think one way that it might manifest itself might be around the types of texts, the types of books that teachers are presenting or that teachers are allowing boys to read. So, for example, last year my son had a really great kindergarten teacher, but you know, she didn't necessarily want him bringing in books around like action heroes, right? Because she wanted books around animals. But you know, if in kindergarten, this is at the time that children learn to read and become engaged in books, and we are already sanctioning the types of books that someone might be interested in, then clearly, if that road continues first grade, second grade, then one can clearly develop an aversion for reading.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at third grade test scores, we ask ourselves, why is it that Black boys, for example, might not necessarily be scoring that well relative to their peers? We say there's something in the water that Black boys might be drinking. Well, no, it might be in the environment, right? The things that we might be sanctioning. So that's just sort of one way I think that that this might manifest itself in school.
I like that. Give me another one, Travis, because that is golden. And I can promise you, after this show archives, I'm going to be listening to this again and taking notes and putting some of this conversation into my presentations to parents. So give me another example, please, where the environment is at a deficit.
I think that the kind of play that we think, so the kind of play that we allow. So now, clearly, we all know that people are socialized beings, that you might be born a male or female, but you know, by your life experience, you become a boy, right? The many things that happen to you and that might make you have more boy tendencies than girl tendencies. So, for example, you know, when two boys might be playing cops and robbers, and, you know, teachers might say, we don't like the gunplay, and I hear that, right? And so you can't play that way. But if two girls are playing with dolls or, you know, playing like they're playing home, then that might be okay. Now, in that interaction, what two boys are doing when you have a good guy and a bad guy, right, they are suggesting to us that you know, that in life that there are good people and that there are bad people. And the good guy should always win. But if boys don't have an opportunity to express themselves in schools in that type of play, we say don't do that. Then school becomes a place where we don't do the things that we like. And so that's another example of the types of play that might be sanctioned.
And you know, and I'm on the internet quite a bit, and I don't know, Travis, with your studies and with your lifestyle, if you even have time to do that right now as leisurely, but a child was just expelled from school here about a week ago for playing tag. So, I mean...
Wow.
We have to think about these things. Let's talk. Do you think the expulsion rate or the expulsion reasons or rationales, do you think that has something to do with it also? Because lately our Black and Brown children are being expelled for their hairstyles, for playing tag, for going to the bathroom. I mean, it's really getting to be very punitive. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I think that the Department – of Justice has brought lawsuits against several school districts for their harsh discipline policy. So I think absolutely there is some relationship, and the federal government is recognizing this, thankfully, and they are forcing school districts to rethink their discipline policies. So I think that clearly has been an issue, and it continues to be. But you know, I think we have a you know, sector of education who is really trying to turn the tide on this.
Yeah, I mean, that is just so powerful. Like you were talking about your first example, how impressionable our young black and brown children are. And if your son wanted to bring his books from home that he likes so much, he wants to put them under his arm and take them to school with him, and the teacher's saying, no, 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 I would rather you read about animals. Meanwhile, he has no interest in animals at all. What is that going to do to his reading?
Right.
His desire to read, you know, that is so powerful, very, very powerful. And that's simply on a whimsical feeling of a teacher. She doesn't want that. She wants this. And we have to understand it's basic social work 101, as I'm a social worker, of meeting the client where they're at. You know, if the child likes to read about action heroes, let him read that, because the more he reads, everybody knows, the better he becomes.
Yeah.
You know, but putting sanctions—I mean, Toni Morrison's books were just sanctioned. That made national press with local high schools and stuff. It's been very, very amazing at how much black authors and black work and black history has been subdued and sanctioned when it comes to getting into schools here in the United States.
Yes. I mean, and I think that on a very sort of national level, these things happen, and in very sort of local spaces, they happen. And unfortunately, many parents, I think, might go along and say, you know, yes, the teacher knows best. But clearly, I am an educator, and I knew that in this case, that my son's teacher did not. So I respected her school, her classroom rules. But I was clearly aware of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that for a minute, Travis. We only have 8 minutes left. Giving power and autonomy and authority to the educator, to the teacher. How much do we allow them to have? I mean, I know, because I'm a degree holding person as well as you are. We know a little bit more because we're exposed to it. But for parents who are not aware and openly clear on these things, we tend to give these teachers a lot of authority and power, don't we?
Well, and I think we should. I mean, we have to recognize that teaching is a profession. People go to school to learn the art and science of teaching, and so there are some things that we should sort of defer to teachers around. I think parents have to recognize that they know their children best. In all decisions that are made, that parents should be brought sort of to the table to add to those decisions, because teachers only, you know, they're only the students for 180 school days, right? But parents have seen their children, know their children, have known them for a much extensive time. So I think that the parents need to sort of need to work with educators and not necessarily give educators the last word.
Okay. Here's what I see, Travis, and I'm a little older than you. I am not a degree holder in education, but I am a degree holder elsewhere. I see schools that are very successful, they educate the parent as well as the child.
Yeah.
They don't take the authoritative, almost controlling dictatorship of you do as we say because we're the teacher and we know what's best. Schools and even the individual classroom where that teacher is willing to meet the parent and educate them and get them to understand what's going on in the process and have that communal communication, open door kind of thing where I'm learning to understand you, you're learning to understand the process, we're both focused on the best interest of the child. Those are the places that do very well. That's
absolutely
what I think.
Yes, I think, and those places are rare, because
exactly.
Who wants, there is this idea that many hands swell the pot.
Right. And as you said before, when people come in with their preconceived ideas and they don't realize how much it impacts the student, you know, if the teacher only wants animal books read for the whole school year, and if that kid has no interest in animals at all, Do you think that child is going to have a good reading year in that classroom? Absolutely not. Absolutely
right.
not. And I have to admit, yep. you're absolutely right. You know, there is a rarity, but even in the school district that my son went to from the time he was in elementary, the teachers met us where we were, and they taught both my son and myself in the classroom, how Jordan could be a good student, how I can be a good parent supporting education, and they really worked very closely in meeting the child's needs, and for that I am grateful. I didn't see that happen with a lot of other parents. What would you say to parents now? We've got 4 minutes left, 5 minutes left. What would you say to parents in all of this work that you're doing, Travis?
Around diversifying the teaching workforce?
Around education and diversity, yes, yes. I mean, you've got two boys, you have two children in the system yourself. What would you say to them as a parent and as a soon-to-be PhD holder?
I mean, I think that you can't, so I am clearly a researcher. There are many, I have spent time talking to, you know, 27 people, and I am sort of creating some theories. But at the end of the day, that these things are just theories. And so it might, you know, with the letters that I might have at the front of my name and at the back of my name, that does not necessarily mean that people who do not have those things are unable to seek after things that might improve the lives of their own kids. So be critical of everything you hear. And always recognize that you know your kids best and
mm-hmm,
you know them
mm-hmm.
better than any test score or any evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
And you should use the knowledge that you have of your children to continue to inform any decisions that educators might make.
Oh, very good, Travis. And I would say, as a parent and as a parent advocate, for parents to utilize the unity in parental power in the school districts, in the classrooms, and to always remember to praise your child, give them that praise when they do well, when things are not going well, give them a chance to explain what they might be feeling, and if you don't know something, ask for help. Google it. Look it up with the internet. Don't sit there and be frustrated or be stymied because the teacher or the principal is talking over your head. Slow them down. Get them to pull back a little bit and say, hey, explain that to me. Can you break that down for me? And take control that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's definitely how I see it. Travis, I can't thank you enough for being on my show. And I'd love to have you come back anytime you want to come back, if you're working on anything else, maybe even getting you and Dr. Marvin Lynn together on the show. That would be so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But,
absolutely.
You know,
I really respect his work.
Yes, me too. I'm very, very grateful for the work that you're doing. And it is an eye-opener. It is thought-provoking. And I really wanted to promote action. So please use this link if you have to send it out to professionals. If your thesis mentor needs to hear what we talked about today, you can certainly
absolutely.
Do that too.
But
thank you very much. And best of luck with your success of completing your PhD degree May 2014. I really am so proud of you and so grateful for the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Travis. And I can't wait to call you Dr. Bristol. Take care now.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
All right, listeners, you had an opportunity to hear us today on the show. Travis's blog is on the Shanker blog. It's dated for September 4th of 2013. It's called Calling Black Men to the Blackboard. I hope that you're able to share this link of this archive show today with educators, with PTA, with parent groups in schools, with single moms in groups, and just get them to understand parents do have power. They do have power, and it's so important that you hold on to that power to upbuild and empower your children's educational success. Diversity is important. It's important in the medical arena. We've seen a necessity there, and it's just as important in the educational arena also. So please stay with me on Black Motherhood Empowerment. We have other upcoming provocative shows coming. I'm very, very grateful to Travis Bristol for coming back onto the show after the first show didn't work out. But with that 18-minute first show, we have over 400 listeners. So hopefully this one will pick up and everyone will see that we've got the full Monty on this one. And thank you all so very, very much for listening. Remember, education saves lives, and we have to give our black and brown children the best advantage on the playing field called life. I'm Denise Bowles, and thank you for joining me here on Black Motherhood Empowerment. Stay empowered.